Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Men in Tights podcast. On this episode, I'm going to be talking about the legendary career of Mark Calloway, aka The Undertaker. And I will specifically on, well, not specifically, but only be talking about his career in the WWE, because yes, he had been wrestling long before he was in WWE, well not long before, but a few years before he came to WWE, but I'm talking about his career in the WWE as the Phenom, the Dead Man, the American Badass, Big Evil, the Last Outlaw, The Undertaker. Yeah, so many different nicknames. And The Last Outlaw, that's one that a lot of people forget that he had that nickname, because was for his match when he fought Triple H at WrestleMania 27, that was the thing that they kept talking about. There can only be one Last Outlaw. Yeah. Of course, by now, everybody has heard the big news of Chapter 5 of the Last Ride docuseries on the WWE Network. The Undertaker officially announced that he is done wrestling. And that his exact words were, this time the cowboy really, really does ride away. The thing that caught me when he said that, you could tell how emotional he was, much of an emotional decision it was, because he sounded like he was on the verge of tears in that moment, but before that he had also said, that he had, at this point in his life, in his career, he has no desire to ever get back into the ring. And I remember, because when I was watching it, like, when he said that, that's, like, the music just stopped when he said that. And then that's when he made the comment of, the cowboy really does ride away, and I mean, I started to cry too, because Undertaker is my second all-time favorite wrestler. Of course, my number one, Bret Hart, the Hitman, right here. It's got the shades sitting right next to me, or behind me, technically. But yes, Undertaker is my second favorite professional wrestler of all time, and yeah, it's, I mean, we knew it was coming. He's 55 now, so of course this was going to happen. It had to happen eventually, and he'd been with WWE for 30 years. He debuted at Survivor Series 1990, and this year, this coming November, would be exactly 30 years from his debut. Exactly when Survivor Series is going to be happening, that Sunday, exactly 30 years. I don't know if they're going to do maybe some kind of tribute thing for him over there. I mean, they've been doing all kinds of tributes on Raw and SmackDown over the past week. But yeah, The Undertaker has officially retired. Officially retired. Not like what happened at WrestleMania 33, where he laid his coat, gloves, and hat in the middle of the ring and then came back a year later. This time, that's it. And I really do believe that this time it is official that he's done. Yeah, because when he did the Broken Skull sessions last November, I felt like that was like the appetizer of what was to come, and then we got the Last Ride documentary, which is one of the best documentaries that WWE has produced in years. Might be my absolute favorite, because again, Undertaker is my second all time favorite wrestler. And just, yeah, it's like his interview on the Broken Skull sessions was the appetizer, and the Last Ride was the main course. And because as soon as they showed the preview for it during WrestleMania weekend, I when I talked to my brother about it, like it was the day after WrestleMania, after day two of WrestleMania, that when we were talking about it. Actually, I think it was actually right after WrestleMania that we were talking about it. And that we both agreed that it's like the way it was the preview alone, it was like, yeah, this is probably going to lead to him either announcing his last match or announcing that he's retiring. And yeah, that's what it was. And it's just kind of crazy that his final match will go down as his boneyard match that he had with AJ Styles at WrestleMania 36 this year, which honestly, probably the best way he could have gone out. And because it was the match of the entire show both days. That's the match that everyone was talking about. It was all over all the wrestling websites, all over social media, all over pop culture sites that, you know, could not get over what they had witnessed with the Boneyard match. And yeah, and I remember, like, right after, you know, day one of WrestleMania ended, and everyone all over Twitter was talking about I remember Mick Foley put a video on Twitter that he was saying, "Vince McMahon, can I be in the next Boneyard match at next year's WrestleMania?" It's just because The Undertaker's he was probably the longest tenured in-ring performer in WWE history. I mean, not probably, you know, he was the longest tenured in-ring performer in WWE. Because, again, he debuted at Survivor Series in 1990 and wrestled at least once a year, every year, for these last 30 years. And it's just amazing to realize that. I mean, I know there's other wrestlers that have been wrestling for like 40 or 50 whatever years, but it's just to be with one company for that long. The only other person that had been there longer than him would have been Howard Finkel. Rest in peace to Howard Finkel. Howard Finkel and maybe Pat Patterson. Those would be the only other people besides Vince McMahon and his family to have been with the company longer than anybody else. But as an in-ring performer, Undertaker has had the longest tenured career with WWE. I guess you could maybe count Shawn Michaels, but because Shawn retired 10 years ago, so it doesn't really count. But Undertaker, yes, 30 years, and had so many amazing matches and rivalries, and you know the stars that he helped create. Like when Jeff Hardy went solo in 2002 the first time, and the series of matches that he had with The Undertaker during that summer helped make people see this guy could be a main event star. Like especially the ladder match that Undertaker and Jeff Hardy had on that episode of Raw for the WWE title. You know, like the way Undertaker sold for Jeff Hardy during that match, you know, the fans were on their feet, and when my brothers and I were watching it at home, we were all like, "Holy shit, Jeff Hardy's gonna win this!" But then, of course, Undertaker, you know, he ended up winning after choke slamming Jeff off of the ladder. But it's just the way Undertaker told that story of him versus Jeff Hardy, and then just again countless other stories and rivalries and stars that he made. Like he helped make John Cena into a star in 2003 when they had their little short rivalry during that time. Who else? Mick Foley. When Mick Foley came into the WWF as Mankind, Undertaker made Mankind a main event star with their first few matches that they had in 1996. At the first King of the Ring match that they had in 1996, then the Boiler Room Brawl, then the Buried Alive match, then their match at Survivor Series 1996, that a lot of people forget about, their WWF title match at the In Your House Revenge of the Taker pay-per-view in 1997, and then, of course, their Hell in a Cell match at King of the Ring 1998. You know, like, if it wasn't for The Undertaker, Mick Foley would not have reached the status that he did in his WWE career. So, again, like I said, just so many stars that can credit The Undertaker for helping them become superstars and legends and Hall of Famers. Like, other guys like Edge, credits Undertaker for helping him get there, The Rock, Triple H, Shawn Michaels. I mean, all the matches that Undertaker and Shawn Michaels had from 1997, because they had the match at Ground Zero In Your House, which was a great match. They had the first ever Hell in a Cell match, which was a great match. The casket match at Royal Rumble 1998 was a great match. And then, of course, there are two matches at WrestleMania 25 and 26. All of those matches, none of those matches were bad. All of them were great, phenomenal. Any one of them could be a match of the year. You know, same with the matches with Undertaker and Triple H. But the match they had at WrestleMania 17 was a great match. The match they had for the WWF title, or WWE title, rather, at King of the Ring 2002 was a great match. Their matches at WrestleMania 27 and 28 were great matches, especially the end of an era Hell in a Cell match was a great match. And honestly, like, looking at all of Undertaker's matches at WrestleMania, as great as the matches with Shawn Michaels were, especially WrestleMania 25, I might honestly say that WrestleMania 28, the Hell in a Cell match with Triple H, but had Shawn Michaels as the referee, might be my favorite WrestleMania match that Undertaker ever had, because it was just, you know, like I've said so many times on this channel talking about these matches, sometimes it's the story that matters more than that, than the actual wrestling. And Undertaker was a master at that. He told so many great stories with so many matches, so many people that he got into the ring with, and telling those stories through the different iterations of his character that he had. Like, you know, in the original version where he was the, you know, supernatural Texas mortician, whatever the fuck character, with the gray gloves and the gray boot covers. And then he had the casket match with Yokozuna at Royal Rumble 1994, which I thought was a great match as well. Other people that I've heard talk about it, you know, like to shit on those matches, I don't know why. But yeah, Undertaker took that time off because his wife at the time had their first kid. And then Undertaker came back at SummerSlam 1994 against the fake Undertaker, played by Brian Lee, or portrayed rather by Brian Lee, who was also chained from the Disciples of Apocalypse stable with Crush and Skull and 8-Ball, aka the Harris Brothers. That's when Undertaker came back with the purple. And with the purple gloves, the purple boots, and the purple lights, and the lighting stuck with him ever since then. So, and then he would go on to have other variations of, you know, that with the purple, where he had the, you know, the cut up sleeves that would go like to right there, like he'd had before. Then it eventually went up to like kind of what I have right now with the no sleeves, and also just his in-ring style had evolved so much over the years, because in the beginning he was very stiff and, you know, zombie like, which was, you know, what was asked of the character at the time, you know, very slow, methodical, you know, as they would say, so that, you know, when he would, you know, like as even Undertaker himself said it, like when they'd be very slow and methodical with his moves and the stuff he would do, so that when he finally pops off and hits you with like a flying clothesline, that's when the crowd goes like, "Holy shit, what was that?" And because again, great at telling that story, and then yeah, when he had the buried alive match with Mankind, he was gone for that entire month after being buried alive. And he returned at that Survivor Series 1996 in, like, you know, leather pleather outfit, coming down from the ceiling with bat wings, which was very silly. And even back then, I thought that it was ridiculous. I was 9 at the time. I turned 10 a month later, but even at 9 years old, watching that, I thought it was ridiculous. But then he would kind of tweak that after he won the WWF title from Psycho Sid at WrestleMania 13, to me, it's one of his most underrated WrestleMania matches. Not a lot of people don't really talk about that match. Same with his match with Diesel at WrestleMania 12. It doesn't get brought up in conversation enough, because most of the people, when they talk about WrestleMania, they look at his matches with Kane, the matches with Triple H, with Shawn Michaels, with Randy Orton and Batista, and maybe Edge. And then, of course, you know, with CM Punk, Brock Lesnar, and now AJ Styles. The rest of the matches, people don't really talk about them. You know, like, nobody wants to talk about Giant Gonzalez, and believe me, he doesn't want to talk about it either. Because that match that he had with him at WrestleMania 9, it is not a good match at all. But when you watch it, the fans are into it, because, like I talked about when I did my WrestleMania watch-along for the first WrestleMania, the fans did not give a shit. They were into everything that was there. You know, they believed it. But just that match was, yeah. The only way Undertaker won it was because it was by DQ. He won by DQ because they had a cloth with like chloroform or whatever on it to knock him out. And then they had another match at SummerSlam 1993 later that year. It was called a Rest in Peace match, which was literally just a regular match. And Undertaker pinned him, he just put a wreath over him, and that was it. He pins him 1, 2, 3, puts a wreath next to him, and that's the end of the. That's it. So it was called a rest in peace match, but it was literally just a regular match. And after pinning him, it's just okay. You know, match is over. 1, 2, 3. I won, and then wreath right over him, and that's it. So. Undertaker was in so many different stipulation matches. I mean, there was the casket match, the rest in peace match, like I said, Hell in a Cell, Boiler Room Brawl, Buried Alive, Inferno match, Last Ride match, which was basically an ambulance match except with a hearse, Punjabi Prison, Biker Chain match, which was just a chain on a pole, Chairs match at the first TLC pay-per-view, which I guess technically would be the first ever chairs match. Boneyard match, first ever. I feel like I'm missing it. A few more. He was in the handicap casket match with Randy Orton and his father, Bob Orton. And the tag team Buried Alive match, where it was Undertaker and Big Show against the Rock and Sock Connection, which that was another great match as well that doesn't get talked about enough, in my opinion. Because I remember it was for the WWF tag titles, and it was on SmackDown. The thing that I remember most about that match was because they had the Buried Alive set right next to the SmackDown stage, the old SmackDown stage with the Ovaltron, and Big Show took Mankind and launched him off the stage, and then boom, right onto the grave, and that looked like it hurt. And that was around the time when Undertaker took some time off because he was having some nagging injuries, and then he returned as the American Badass at Judgment Day 2000, interrupting the closing minutes, or closing seconds, rather, of the Iron Man match with Triple H and The Rock. And, you know, that was a cool moment, too, which, I mean, they kind of spoiled it because in the poster for Judgment Day, it's a picture of Kane's face with the Undertaker symbol in his eye, which, I mean, I don't know why Kane was on the poster. He wasn't even at the pay-per-view. He didn't come back until like 2 weeks later. But yeah, kind of hate when they spoil stuff like that. You know, but don't care. It was a cool return. Because Undertaker wanted to come back as that form of the character because he felt that everything he had done around that time, like, you know, they were in the heat of the Attitude Era, and you know he felt like that his stuff was getting a little stale. He wanted to change it up, and I enjoyed it. I thought it worked. I know there's a lot of people out there who didn't like the American Badass character, and I guess at WrestleMania he had like almost like a hybrid version of it, or as he described it on the last ride, that it was a hybrid of Deadman, American Badass, and Mark Calloway, all wrapped into one person for that Boneyard match with AJ Styles, and it worked. And of course also there was the Ministry of Darkness era for Undertaker from late 1998 early summer of 1999, which, I mean, I was not a fan of it at first, but like looking back on it now, I realized, you know what, this was pretty cool. This was a lot cooler than I remembered it, and especially his theme song, the slower version of the Ministry theme song that he had, because the one that's on that they release on the compilation albums, you know, like Music Volume 4 or Anthology or the Undertaker music compilation that they have, it's, you know, just, you know, very, I don't like the way having it like that, but the slower, you know, version made it just sound creepier and more gothic, and I love that. But there's also the version that he had at WrestleMania 15 that he debuted when he fought Big Boss Man in the Forgotten Hell in a Cell match. That one's a pretty cool version too, but yeah, the slow version that he had for the remainder of his ministry run, I really loved. And I don't know. I wonder how much further the ministry gimmick could have gone if Undertaker had, you know, stuck with it. But yeah, he chose to go American Badass, and I loved it. You know, he came out to American Badass by Kid Rock, and then, you know, a few months later, he switched it to Roland by Limp Bizkit, which, you know, I love Limp Bizkit as well, so that was cool. And he had seen me, and it allowed him to change up his style as more of a, you know, to do more wrestling as opposed to what he had been doing before. Like, he had to implement, like, you know, some MMA-style combat and submission holds, that he would later merge onto his style when he became the Dead Man Undertaker once again when he returned to WrestleMania 20, which is probably one of the coolest returns that I've ever seen in wrestling. With the complemented with the return of Paul Bearer, rest in peace to Paul Bearer. That was awesome as well. But yeah, some of the matches that he had when he became the American Badass Undertaker, like again, the match with Triple H WrestleMania 17 was a great match. The matches that he had with Kurt Angle were really good as well, and the matches that he had with Brock Lesnar, like the match he had with Brock Lesnar at Unforgiven 2002 was a great match, and then the Hell in a Cell match they had it 1 month later at No Mercy was a phenomenal match, and that's another star that he made in that rivalry. He made Brock Lesnar a superstar with those two matches, especially with the Hell in a Cell match, having Brock Lesnar beat him clean in that match. And Undertaker, I don't know how deep he cut himself, or if it was that he did it himself, or if it was the stairs that did it, because he was bleeding so, like it was literally like, you know, you just turn on a faucet and just let it run for like 20 or 30 minutes, because that blood did not stop flowing for the entire duration of the match, from the point that he started bleeding, because that was just, whew. I mean, it was almost as bad as when Eddie Guerrero got cut open in his match with JBL at Judgment Day 2004, or even John Cena in his match with JBL at Judgment Day 2005. But yeah, he just bled so, whew. And I wonder if he lost maybe too much blood, because at some parts during the match, Undertaker did move a little bit slow. I don't know if that was him just selling really well for Brock, or, you know, that he was just legitimately out of it. I don't know. But yeah, then he also had the great match with Ric Flair or WrestleMania 18 earlier that year. That he, because at the time he didn't have anything going into WrestleMania, and he went to Vince and was like, you know, I want to get in the ring with Ric Flair, you know, and to me, had the best match at WrestleMania 18. I know everybody goes crazy for The Rock and Hulk Hogan, and I get it. It told a great story, but it was not a technically great match. Yeah, and like I've said in my WrestleMania video that I did last year, talking about the greatest matches ever, that if you mute the audio for Rock versus Hogan, not really that exciting. It's kind of boring, but it's because it's the atmosphere and the crowd that helped make it. But Undertaker and Ric Flair, the street fight, or, well, just no disqualification or whatever is the term that they actually use for it, that's the match that I prefer for WrestleMania 18. And my brothers do as well. At least that's what they've told me. But that was my favorite match from WrestleMania 18. I thought it was a great match. Matches that he also had with Stone Cold Steve Austin off and on from 1997 to 2002 were great matches as well. Like the match that they had at Cold Day in Hell for the WWF title in your house in May 1997. That was a really good match. The match that they had at SummerSlam 1998, Highway to Hell for the WWF title, was a great match. At least I thought it was a great match. And, you know, I'll be talking about SummerSlam 1998 on Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views next month, so be on the lookout for that. And then the match that they had for the WWF title at Judgment Day 2001 was a great match as well. And the match that they had, it was the No More Contender match at Backlash 2002 with Ric Flair as the referee, was also a very good match. And that's where Undertaker went on to Judgment Day to defeat Hulk Hogan for the WWE title in an okay match, but it introduced the new, you know, the new version of Undertaker's theme, the boom, Dead Man Walking, and which they actually released that original instrumental version of the song on the Uncaged 11, I believe it was, WWE Uncaged 11, which you can get on Apple Music or Spotify. And then he had the vocal version, You're Gonna Pay, which is, you know, really cool song as well. But I honestly kind of prefer the one without the vocals, because it was just, it's just cool. It's a good song to just, you know, play, and you're just, See, I would play the actual audio version, but I don't want to get a strike from YouTube on here, so, yeah. You're going to have to just settle for me doing it myself. Shit, why am I going blank now? But then, yeah, then, like I said, he had the match with John Cena at Vengeance 2003. That had helped to elevate John Cena's status a little higher. Then he had the biker chain match with Brock Lesnar at No Mercy 2003, which was a very good match. WWE title match with Kurt Angle on SmackDown, 2 months before that one, was also very good. Matches that he had with JBL in the summer of 2004, at the match that they had at SummerSlam, was a very good match, even though the fans at the Air Canada Center, I believe it was, in Toronto, were fucking weird and doing the wave during that match. I don't know why. It was a very good match. I was enjoying it. And then the Last Ride match that they had at No Mercy later that year was also a very good match. And then a few months later, we got the match that, where they officially made the undefeated streak for WrestleMania a thing that to aspire to defeating the undefeated streak, or breaking the streak, rather, when he fought Randy Orton at WrestleMania 21, which was, even though Randy Orton had already been, World Heavyweight Champion up to by that point, people weren't really ready for him to accept him as a main event star, at least that's how it came off at the time. But that match that he had with Undertaker at WrestleMania 21, that's another match that helped elevate him to that, main event status. And then the match that they had later that year at SummerSlam was another one that helped elevate him to the main event status. And then they had the handicap casket match with Randy and his father, Cowboy Bob Orton, and then the Hell in a Cell match with Randy Orton and Undertaker at Armageddon at the end of the year, which was also another very good match. And he was pissed off with Bob Orton because he bled during the match and found out that he had hepatitis. So Undertaker was pissed off, from what I've read, which I can't blame him. If I found out that somebody bled all over me, and then I found out that they had hepatitis, I'd be fucking pissed as well. So fuck Bob Orton for that one. And Undertaker disappeared for a little bit, and then we would go to No Way Out 2006, where he fought Kurt Angle for the World Heavyweight Championship in a match that I think was going to be for WrestleMania at some point, but because Kurt Angle didn't want to be the one to break the WrestleMania streak, they decided, alright, let's put it on No Way Out instead. And my god, that match was just fucking amazing. It's probably, out of all the matches that Kurt Angle has had in his WWE career, Kurt Angle had a lot of great matches in his WWE career. I would honestly say that match with Undertaker at No Way Out 2006 might be my personal favorite of his matches. Yeah, I know other people will say his matches with Benoit were better, matches with Brock Lesnar were better, matches with Shawn Michaels were better, matches with John Cena were better. Sure, okay, that is your opinion. I'm not going to argue, because those were all phenomenal matches as well. But to me, the match that he had with Undertaker at No Way Out 2006, it's just his best match, in my opinion. Again, I completely understand the argument to say the others were his best. This is my personal opinion that's his best match. And then I remember, because in then 2006, Undertaker had his matches with the Great Khali, which was essentially a repeat of Giant Gonzalez, where it was just another big guy for the Undertaker to fight, because during the 90s, Undertaker just had that reputation of fighting all the big guys that didn't know how to work, and he was tasked with, as they would say, turning chicken shit into chicken salad. And he, as hard as he did, could not turn that chicken shit into chicken salad. Couldn't do it with Gonzalez. Couldn't do it with even Kamala. Because, no disrespect to Kamala. He's a legend. And I know he's in very poor health, had his legs amputated from diabetes and all kinds of things going on. But the matches that Undertaker had with him sucked. The matches with Giant Gonzalez sucked. The match with King Kong Bundy sucked. Match that he had with Mabel, the casket match with Mabel, sucked. Even though Undertaker had the cool phantom mask that after he had his orbital bone crushed. Oh, shit. I can't believe I forgot. The matches that Undertaker had with Bret Hart were probably my favorite Undertaker matches. Because he fought Bret Hart for the WWF title at Royal Rumble 1996, and that was the jump-off point for his match with Diesel at WrestleMania 12. But then the match that they had at SummerSlam 1997, which probably would be my favorite match between the two of them, at least, for the WWE titles. Undertaker defending against Bret Hart with Shawn Michaels as the referee. And that was just... because this was around the time when Undertaker started to do more wrestling, even though he was still the Dead Man at the time. This is before he became... long before he became American Badass, obviously. And Bret Hart, of course, greatest technical wrestler of all time, my all-time favorite wrestler, my number one and number two in the ring for the world title in the main event of SummerSlam, and SummerSlam 97 is probably my third favorite SummerSlam. Maybe second or third, I don't know. Cuz my top 3 are 97, 98, and 2002. The order changes depending on how I'm feeling, cuz all three of those were great. But yeah, that match with Bret Hart was just fucking phenomenal. And sorry, I had a little flutter in my chest. But yeah, then going back to 2006, after the shit matches that he had with Kali, he jumped into a feud with Mr. Kennedy. And yeah, the man right here, Mr. Kennedy. And those matches were great too. He had a regular match with him at No Mercy, I believe it was a regular match. And then he had a First Blood match with him at Survivor Series, which was a very good match as well. And then they had a Last Ride match at Armageddon the following month, which was another great one. Because I remember at one point he chokeslammed him off the entrance, and then because the stage that they had, it was, I don't even know how I would describe it. It was supposed to look like a post-apocalyptic thing because it's Armageddon, and yeah, they were fighting on top of like one of the platforms on the stage, and Undertaker chokeslammed him off of it, which was really cool. And then we had the awesome moment for the Royal Rumble 2007 when he came in at number 30, and him and Shawn Michaels had like a mini wrestling match at the end of the Royal Rumble, because I think they went at it for like 10 or 15 minutes. So essentially, they had a mini wrestling match, and then that eventually led to the Undertaker and Batista at WrestleMania 23, and their series of matches that were just fucking amazing as well. Because at that point, Batista, I mean, I liked Batista, but he didn't have a lot of great matches up to that point. I mean, the matches they had with Triple H were really good, but besides those matches, he didn't really have a lot going on. But then the matches that he had with Undertaker at WrestleMania was great. The Last Man Standing match at Backlash was great. The Steel Cage match that they had on that SmackDown was great. The match that they had at Cyber Sunday later that year was awesome as well. And then the Hell in a Cell match they had at Survivor Series was great. I haven't seen the chairs match that they had at the TLC pay-per-view in 2009, so I don't know how great that one was or bad or whatever it was. But those matches that they had in 2007 were all amazing. And it was cool, because it wasn't like that it was a rivalry over anything stupid. It was simply just fighting to see who's the best. And sometimes simple storylines like that are the best kind. Not every storyline has to be something ridiculous. It doesn't have to be ridiculous like Booker T and Kurt Angle, and where Kurt Angle wanted to have animal sex with his with Charmel. Man, that's a discussion for another podcast. But then also because the cage match that Undertaker and Batista had, it ended with them climbing out the cage, landing at the same time, so it was declared a draw. And then Mark Henry came out because they had the casket match the year before at WrestleMania, and Mark Henry was out with an injury not too long after that. He came out took out The Undertaker, and then Edge came out to cash in the Money in the Bank that he had won from Mr. Kennedy on the Raw earlier in the week, and that's what planted the seeds for their story going into WrestleMania 24, which that was another that story between Edge and The Undertaker, because their story, of course, yeah, year-long build-up, because Edge took the title from him, and then he cost him the title at Survivor Series in the Hell in a Cell match because he pretended to be a camera guy. But that's also because they up until that point, they were both undefeated at WrestleMania. And that was a really cool story, in my opinion. That's because I feel like a lot of people forgot that Edge had an undefeated streak as well. You know, but yeah, it was Undertaker never lost, Edge never lost at WrestleMania. They were going to fight for the world title in the main event, and it was one of the probably the most underrated WrestleMania main event ever, in my opinion. To me, it is the most underrated WrestleMania main event. And of course, Undertaker won that, and then they had another great match at Backlash the following month. Another great match at Judgment Day the month after that. And then they had the TLC match at the One Night Stand pay-per-view that June, where if Undertaker lost, he would have to retire. And of course, that we know that when that was not an official retirement. But they played it off like it was, because when Undertaker walked up the ramp, instead of doing the fist in the air, he just looked back at the crowd and just had this look on his face just like... You know, like an "I'll miss you" kind of expression on his face. You know, but then Undertaker got reinstated, and they had a Hell in a Cell match that at SummerSlam that year, which was on another great phenomenal match that, you know, saw Undertaker chokeslam Edge to the fiery depths of hell, because he chokeslammed him through the ring, and then flames came up. So we're to assume that Undertaker burned him alive, I guess, which technically would make Undertaker a murderer, but they're not gonna, you know, put that out there. Yeah, and then of course, cause then also, like, jumping back to Shawn Michaels and Undertaker, they closed the Royal Rumble match in 2007, but then they opened the Royal Rumble match in 2008. And if I remember correctly, I think Bruce Pritchard had talked about it, saying that it was an intentional thing, that they were, like, testing the waters on having them fight one-on-one for WrestleMania when they were going to go to Texas for WrestleMania 25. And then we got that final tease between them in 2009, at the Royal Rumble 2009, when Shawn Michaels was in that storyline where he was working for JBL and he was going to accompany JBL for his match against John Cena. That, you know, like, Shawn Michaels was talking to JBL, and then he turned around, you know, to look at something, and then when he turned right back around, Undertaker was right there. And that's when he spouted out that famous line, "Now, it's hell trying to get to heaven." And it was just awesome. It's just from that little moment sparked everyone just like, "Oh shit, if they're gonna have their match, it's gotta be this year." And that's when they finally had the match, and the build up to it was just one of the best build up of any WrestleMania match or just any wrestling match ever, in my opinion. And then, of course, the match, you know, 5 stars match of the year, no doubt. I would say the only other match that I could say probably had as great of a build-up is the first time Undertaker and Kane fought for WrestleMania 14, because there was that long build-up from summer of 97 when Paul Bearer proclaimed that Kane was still alive, and then he debuts in the Hell in a Cell match with Shawn Michaels at Bad Blood 1997, which you can find that in the archives right here on the channel for my first Classic Wrestling pay-per-view that I did last October, where he took him out with his own tombstone. And then when it looked like they were going to reconcile and be together, he turns on him again at the Royal Rumble in the casket, in that casket match with Shawn Michaels, locked him in the casket, and then sets the casket on fire, and then we don't see Undertaker for 2 months. And then he makes that big return on Raw, leading up to WrestleMania 14, and that was a really fun build-up as well. And I remember when the way Kane talked about it when he was on the Broken Skull Sessions, just standing in the ring during Undertaker's entrance, it was just like, you know, the most awe-inspiring thing. And the Undertaker, his entrance really is one of those you know, if you get to experience it live, it really is one of those just like, wow, I can't believe I get to experience this, which I technically have, but technically haven't, because the only time I got to see Undertaker live was in 1996 at a show, it was a house show at Madison Square Garden on the week before WrestleMania 12, that it was the main event match, was Undertaker and Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels and Diesel in a tag match. And when Undertaker came out, instead of doing his traditional entrance, he came out, you know, almost sprinting out to attack Diesel to help hype up their match for WrestleMania, and that was really cool. And I think I actually have the match saved on my watch later list on here for to watch, which I haven't watched in a while. What makes it even better is that that's the match where Diesel turns on Shawn Michaels to set up their match at the In Your House pay-per-view for April. And because I remember when it was my mom, my dad, both my brothers, myself, obviously, that we were all there. We had such a great time. And then when they showed the footage of that the next night on Monday Night Raw, we were flipping out because it was like, you know, we were just like, holy shit, that we were there for that. You know, and it's just awesome to realize that we were there for something that big, and they got they showed it on Monday Night Raw the next day, and we were there for something that actually meant something, you know, not because a lot of times house shows are just, you know, stuff for the local crowd, whatever happens, but we were there for a storyline progression, and that was awesome. Shit, where was I going with it? The storyline with Kane and Undertaker, one of the best built-up storylines from, when Paul Bearer proclaimed that he was still alive all the way up until WrestleMania, when they finally had their one-on-one fight, and then the Inferno match that they had a month later, which, I don't know, I still cannot believe that they were able to pull that off, because that's the logistics of it, and the balls to do such a thing was just amazing. And the fact that nobody got legitimately burned up during that match is amazing to me, because Kane, of course, he had the sleeve that was padded down and prepared for it. And how the ropes didn't catch fire either is amazing to me. And this is funny because they had that Inferno match twice. It was that one, and then they had one a year later during the build-up of the ministry and Vince McMahon storyline, where, you know, they had the teddy bear that was supposed to be Stephanie's teddy bear from when she was a little girl, that he took that, set it on fire, and then just tossed it over by Vince. And that's one of the things, I had the long goatee that I've actually debated on whether or not I should try that, because I've done it before. I've never shown it off on video, but I've debated on that. You know, because this beard, as much as I love this beard, I've been debating on whether or not I should trim it or shape it up into something else. You know, we'll see. Maybe on the next video, you guys will see me with different facial hair. The WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker was one of the best build-ups to it. And then the video that they show before the match is one of my favorites as well. After that match, Undertaker didn't really do that much for the rest of the year. I mean, he had his mini rivalry with CM Punk, where he showed up at the end of the TLC match at SummerSlam that year, and they had their submission match at the Breaking Point pay-per-view, which was supposed to be like a Montreal Screwjob finish, but then they had a Hell in a Cell match the next month, which was kind of eh. It was eh. And then Undertaker, because Shawn Michaels, made the challenge to Undertaker, to go one more time. And Undertaker kept saying, no, I won't fight you. And so then Shawn Michaels kept antagonizing him. And then he said that I'm going to win the Royal Rumble, so then you'll have to face me. And then when he lost the Royal Rumble, he felt lost, like he had no other choice, he didn't have anything going. And then the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view came up, and he cost the Undertaker the world title in that match. And that's when Undertaker was like, fuck it, I accept, but only if you put your career on the line. And that's where we got Shawn Michaels' final match as a full-time competitor in professional wrestling. And I say it that way because he would, of course, come back years later for the match at the Saudi show, which, I'm sure he regrets at this point. But, yeah, he retired Shawn Michaels, and Undertaker spent most of the year off after that. Because that's when Undertaker started having the, once or twice only a year schedule, because he had a match with Ray, and apparently he had an orbital bone injury again there, and then he was gone for 2 months, and they had the whole vegetative state storyline, which was just weird to me. And then he came back at SummerSlam that year during Kane versus Rey Mysterio world title match, where Undertaker popped out of a casket, cornered Rey Mysterio, making everyone think, like, oh, he was going to get Rey because Rey did it to him, and then Undertaker just did the quick turn that he always did to look at Kane, and then I remember the crowd went nuts for that, and even though it was so obvious and just a simple head turn, it's just the storytelling of the Undertaker that just simply turning his head to look at somebody got that kind of reaction from the crowd. And then that led to them having another match at Night of Champions the following month. And then they had a Hell in a Cell match the month after that. I haven't seen those two matches yet. I probably should. I'm told that they were good matches. And then also they had a Buried Alive match at the Bragging Rights pay-per-view later on. But I think the end of October, I believe. Again, I haven't seen any of those matches, but I probably should. And then Undertaker was gone again, and then that's when we got the vignettes, that 2:21:11 vignettes in the cabin with the Undertaker, and then that was what led to his match with Triple H at WrestleMania that year, which that one had a awesome build-up video as well with the song In Time. That was on the Punisher movie soundtrack. Undertaker came out to Ain't No Grave by Johnny Cash, they dubbed it with his regular theme song on the network and on the DVD and Blu-ray releases. But watching it, but him having that music live on the pay-per-view was really cool. And then again, after that, Undertaker was gone the rest of the year. And then even though he beat Triple H, he was carted out of the arena. And Undertaker, came back a year later. I remember it was on the Raw when Triple H was gonna feature Endeavor, John Laurinaitis, and right as he was about to say it, the bell came off, and everyone just got so, even Triple H was like best of luck in your ding, kind of thing. In which Triple H, he's great at having those facial reactions to sell those moments, and then Undertaker came out. And looked up at the WrestleMania sign, and I think he did that, his signature thing. But then, because Undertaker wanted one more time with him. And then they showed the vignettes of Undertaker, chopping off his hair, which is just kind of silly. At the time I thought it was silly, and it's still silly to me now, I'll keep chopping my hair until you accept my rematch, which is just getting silly. But the reasoning with Undertaker wanting that match, because he in the promos he said, I don't want those images to be the final memory that they have of me. Which, hey, whether it doesn't matter if it's dead man or whatever, that's a pride thing. We all have that, in us. And Which, of course, and yeah, Triple H finally accepted it, and then he said, under one condition, Hell in a Cell. And we got the awesome built video for that with The Memory Remains by Metallica, and the build-up video for that one. That was really cool. And then, just again, like I said, to me, that match, that Hell in a Cell, and that end of an era Hell in a Cell match, with Undertaker and Triple H, Shawn Michaels as the referee, is my favorite, to me, my favorite, and to me, the best Undertaker match at WrestleMania. That's just my opinion. Because of this, because, again, the match itself was awesome, but it's also the story behind and during the match that made it even better. And then a year later, Undertaker versus CM Punk, that was built off of mostly Paul Bearer passing away and CM Punk being a dick by carrying around an urn that was supposed to be, you know, mocking Paul, the memory of Paul Bearer. And I remember the final Raw before WrestleMania, Paul Heyman came out dressed as Paul Bearer, and had some druids. One of them was CM Punk, and they used that as a distraction to attack Undertaker. And then I remember he took the urn and dumped out all the ashes onto him, which is just so fucked up. But it was a great, it helped build up a great story. And then they had an awesome match at WrestleMania 29 as well. And yeah, and then of course Undertaker's gone again for the whole for another whole year. And then I remember because then Brock Lesnar had an open contract for WrestleMania 30, and that's when Undertaker came out to accept it, and he signed it with pen into his hand, and then signed basically saying that he signed it in his blood. And that's when Undertaker had the completely shaved, except for the mohawk, and then only had the goatee, like the Ministry Undertaker again. And yeah, that's when the streak was officially broken by Brock Lesnar. And a lot of fans, still to this day, 6 years later, keep talking about how that was a mistake. And I can understand their reasonings behind why they think it's a mistake, but if anyone was going to break the streak, nobody, didn't matter who it was that broke the streak, they were going to get a lot of heat from the fans. Fans were going to hate them no matter what. Brock Lesnar is the only person that can take that heat and run with it. And he's still living off of it so many years later. Paul Heyman still can push it out there. The man who conquered the Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. And of course, also, we all know the story about how Undertaker had the concussion during that match. I mean, he was very open about it on the Last Ride and on the Broken Skull Sessions. And just, yeah. And then Undertaker was gone the rest of that year, came back and had his match with Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 31, which was pretty good. Then he continued his rivalry with Brock Lesnar later that year, where they had their match at SummerSlam. And then they had another great Hell in a Cell match after that. And then, so he had his, at the 25th anniversary of The Undertaker at Survivor Series, that he, it was him and Kane versus the Wyatt family, in essentially a squash match. Then we had him and Shane versus at Hell in a Cell of WrestleMania, where Shane almost died doing an elbow drop off the even taller Hell in a Cell. And then the match with him and Roman Reigns, the next WrestleMania, which I've watched it a few times, and it really is so painful to watch. But him laying out the gloves and the hat and the coat in the middle of the ring, at the time, yeah, it was the perfect send-off for The Undertaker. But of course, you know, that pride, you know, he didn't want to go out that way. So he came back, had his match with Cena at WrestleMania 34, then he did the Saudi shows, he didn't have WrestleMania in 2019, but he did have the match with Goldberg, which that was another match that just, yeah, he could not live with it. So then he had the tag match at Extreme Rules, teaming up with Roman Reigns against Shane and Drew McIntyre, which that one was a good match. That one was cool. And then, of course, we had the Boneyard match at WrestleMania 36. That one, again, to me, that is the perfect send-off for The Undertaker. You know, because it was, the most unique match in WrestleMania history, beautifully put together by Triple H and Jeremy Borash and others that were involved in the production of that. And just the symbolism also of Undertaker getting on the motorcycle and riding off, you know, into the darkness at the end of it. It's like, you know, like he was riding off as the conquering hero, and also, like, you know, riding off into the sunset, as they would say, you know, or like how he said it, the cowboy really does ride away. And just, yeah, it's just the career that Undertaker had from these last 30 years. Like, nobody else could have pulled it off the way he did. Nobody else could have been the Undertaker like him. Nobody else could have done that character in the different iterations of it like he did. And yeah, like I said, when I was watching the Chapter 5, you know, I cried multiple times. I cried when he talked about his brother having the heart attack, because it reminded me a lot of when my father had a stroke. Even it's not exactly the same thing, but, you know, situation is very similar, and it reminded me a lot of that, so I cried for that. And when he talked about his own father and missing him, I cried for that too. And, oh fuck, I feel like I'm gonna cry right now. Oh fuck. And then him finally saying that he's done at the end of it, I cried for that as well, because it's just, again, he's, you know, like I said, it's Bret Hart, and then right there is the Undertaker, like, right there. Yeah. And it's gonna be hard, you know. Not necessarily hard, but it's gonna be just weird to not have him around anymore, you know? I mean, I'm sure he'll still be around for, like, contributing to, like, documentaries and stuff like that, but, you know, and of course, he's gonna be in video games forever. They're gonna have all countless merchandise with him, and he's a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame. We all know that. He's gonna headline the Hall of Fame, you know, whenever. Most likely next year, class of 2021. You know, that is the most likely one. And, but who's going to be the one to induct him? You know, it could be Stone Cold, it could be Kane, could be Shawn Michaels, could be Triple H, could be Mick Foley, you know, could be Vince, since he and Vince have a very close relationship. Could be any of those guys. More than likely, it's going to be, you know, Kane or Vince, but, you know, either way, his spot in the Hall of Fame was already guaranteed, you know, 20 years ago, so... But yeah, I'm gonna be spending a lot of days now rewatching a lot of Undertaker's matches, because I'm gonna be honest, you know, wrestling currently is not that exciting for me. You know, Raw has not been that great, SmackDown hasn't been great, Impact Wrestling's been okay, NXT has been good, AEW has been hit or miss for me mostly. Yeah. So, I'm gonna be enjoying a lot of the great Undertaker matches of the last 30 years. His matches with Shawn Michaels, his matches with Triple H, Stone Cold, The Rock, Mick Foley, Kane, Jeff Hardy, Brock Lesnar, Big Show even. I'm gonna enjoy those memories very well. And I hope you enjoyed listening to me talk for the last hour about The Undertaker. If you want to, you can leave a comment below this video sharing some of your favorite memories of The Undertaker. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, please do so. Hit the notification bell so you get all updates that I have on this channel. And if you'd like to have the audio-only version, if you don't want to look at my face all the time, you can subscribe on CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And you can follow me on all my social media. All the links are down below: Twitter, Instagram, Vero, my wrestling page on Facebook, Down for the Count, if anyone would like to check that out. Check out the Minutize Podcast store. The link will be in the description below. I have so many different designs on there. If you find one that you like, they're available in t-shirt, tank top, sweater, hoodie, kid sizes, adult sizes, and they also have stickers and magnets and pins, tapestry, notebooks, phone cases, pillows, and masks for as well. And if you'd like to support the channel, please do so by joining my Patreon for $1 a month. It'd be very helpful in these hard economic times that we are experiencing all over the world. And yeah, I hope you're all doing well. Hope you have a wonderful week, an even better weekend. And if you're living in the United States, hope you have a fun and safe 4th of July celebration. If you're going to be the type of person that has fireworks in your yard, please make sure that you're not an idiot and you don't blow yourself up. Stay safe, stay healthy, take care of yourselves, your loved ones, and this has been the Minutize Podcast. I love you all so much for watching, subscribing, for listening. And I hope you do very well going forward. Don't know where the fuck I was going with that. But I hope you have a wonderful week, wonderful weekend. I love you all. I am Julian. Y'all have a wonderful day.